Hello, welcome back for another episode of the super exciting, spoilerific, extra features movie review podcast, episode 285. And I forgot the last time, but I have to remind you all that during the course of our discussions, we will potentially be spoiling plot points and character reveals in the movies that we are discussing. I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon.
I'm Daniel.
I'm Doug.
And the intern still exists.
Are you going away somewhere that you wouldn't exist?
Yeah, I'm going into the pocket dimension of whatever.
If someone wakes him up in the real world,
yeah,
he could potentially disappear from here in the Matrix.
Yeah,
that'd be kind of cool. Can I see that?
Are we getting right into it without this discussion?
We're just joking. What's the discussion topic for this week? Is there a discussion topic for this week?
I can plug my son's Christmas special if you go onto YouTube and look up the channel of Owen Hahner, spelled H-A-H-N-E-R. You could find the 2021 Hahner Family Christmas special.
Hold on. You didn't give them the whole news. There also is a 2020... Christmas
yes.
special
with that is true
and bad beer.
H-A-H-N-E-R?
Yes.
And this is the naughty sequel, right, Doug?
Yes, it is R-rated for language. I will admit I have a potty mouth.
You do. And for some reason I got cut out again. I guess I'm still haven't become a member of the family.
Are you wearing a Peacemaker shirt?
Yes, I am. I am wearing Peacemaker.
Okay, I see it.
By the third year, I think we need to send you a Christmas card so you could just have an Easter egg in the short
film. You know what? We're doing that. You're right. We are going to do that for next year.
Okay.
Feel like we've graduated to that level, right, Doug?
I think just like yes. pasted like behind the kitchen, like on the fridge or something. He just walks by it and see it. So you got to know it's us, but that would be funny.
Yes.
Don't tell us where it is. We'll look.
No, we don't want to know where it is. You get multiple
views next year. So,
okay.
Sorry, Doug, you broke up a bit.
I was gonna say we might have to film it in the summer this year because Owen's going away to college.
Yeah, so. I'll have it sent to you immediately. Right. I'll have you tell me ready. I will get that set up for you. The intern may not be in it because he's gone to a separate dimension, but the rest of us will be good to go.
Okay.
The multiverse of extra features.
It is.
Extraverse. We're going right to the Matrix Resurrections?
Correct.
Yes, okay. Directed by Lena Rakowski, written by Lena Rakowski, David Mitchell, Alexander Heyman, starring Keanu Reeves, Carrie-Anne Moss, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Jonathan Groff, Jessica Henwick, Neil Patrick Harris, Jada Pinkett Smith, Priyanka Chopra Jones, and Christina Ricci. And if there's anyone I missed, I stopped reading the cast list because I got bored.
Wow, you're getting better at this, are you?
Yeah. I did not watch this one.
Kevin?
So I got lucky. I actually got invited to go to the Canadian premiere of this movie. And so did Bob, actually. You were there as well.
Just not in the same.
Yeah, exactly. So it was at the Scotiabank Theater, which has like 13 cinemas, I think.
Actually, 14.
And one of them is the big IMAX screen. So every theater showed us The Matrix, and it all started at exactly the same time, basically. So Keanu was there, as was Carrie-Anne Moss, but he didn't come into my theater or yours, I hear.
Nope.
So a few people saw him. I know saw him in the hallways. It was pretty wild. I mean, as far as the film goes, I didn't feel like I wasted my time watching it. Like Spider-Man, I think of Spider-Man, which I saw the day after, I was riveted and engaged the entire film. There are quite a few times during Matrix Resurrections where I was like, why does this film exist? Why am I here? Do I care? That's weird. But overall, you know, why is John Wick in a Matrix movie? Things like that. But overall, I thought it was an entertaining enough experience. It's kind of two films. One is a meta commentary on sequels and property rights and things like that. As we look at, John Wick in this case is now Thomas Anderson again, and he's a video game designer who designed the very popular Matrix trilogy. So in a sense, is this our world he's in? Is this really another mind screw over where we basically are dealing with a guy who created a game years ago that we all loved, right? And now they want to make a sequel. Warner Brothers, in fact, is named in it as being the company that owns the property, and they want to do a fourth game. And so they've commissioned Keanu Reeves and his team to do it with some pointless cameos from people like Christina Ricci, who just shows up for some reason and then is never back again. But it's also, you know, is maybe the Matrix is real. Maybe, and in the background we have, I can't remember the actress's name, but she was Colleen Wing in the Iron Fist show. And she was in Force Awakens as the sister that dies. Last Jedi, I should say. Let's try to block that movie out of my mind. But yeah, this, she appears to be the new Trinity or whatever running around. And the Matrix seems to be a video game on a loop. And there's now a new Morpheus who's an agent, who's not an agent, who's so they're all in little conceits. And from what I understand, Warner Brothers wanted to make the film and they went to the Wachowskis and they said, well, we'll make it so that you don't make it. And in fact, it's not the Wachowskis. It's just one Wachowski, Lana, who decided to be involved with this one. And so then it devolves into all the things I hated about the second and third movies in the Matrix sequels. Stuff about Zion and the real world and, hippies living in the core of the earth, all that garbage. So I don't know if I just thought it was okay. You know, there's a new Agent Smith. There's a new Morpheus. They're not quite the same, but they are. And I guess they couldn't get the actors back, so they recast and Trinity comes back and it kind of emasculates Neo in a sense, right? So my whole problem with the Matrix trilogy goes back to the first movie, or quadrilogy now, and that at the end of the movie, Neo is unhooked from the Matrix, but he can now connect through it with his mind. He now sees, and when he's in the Matrix, he sees it as it is. It's code, and code can be manipulated and he can do whatever he wants. So when we come back to the second movie, he no longer sees the Matrix just as code. He flies around in it and he becomes like he's part of, like he's a normal person in the Matrix. He's transcended that. And that was my whole problem with the whole series, was that, you know, once he transcended at the end of the first film, he should never have been able to plug in and see the Matrix as it was, as an interactive environment. And so here he's back again in the Matrix, plugged in. An interesting turn of events with Neil Patrick Harris as the personification of the Matrix and his therapist, complete with a cat named Deja Vu. The idea of personifying the Matrix and giving it a mustache twirling a personification to me just seems silly. Like the Matrix should be mindless. We're enslaving humanity. It's not driving budgets and worried about other things like that. Capitalizing on bullet time and making improvements in that way. It just makes it seem like it's another villain to be overcome in a superhero comic. So overall, I'm not giving this a great recommendation. It's, if you want to just have a mindless Matrix movie, here you go.
Wow. I have to agree with everything you said, other than just I want to add a few things. Mm-hmm. I was bored out of my skull for the first half an hour. I'm just like, Is there a point to this? Like, why is this film being made? I thought maybe we're starting a new trilogy. Maybe it was just like an offshoot. Maybe it was a big thing. But I missed bullet time. Oh, my God. When the fighting started, I totally got back in. So any scene that involved fighting, I was in. Anytime they talked, didn't care. Had no interest in what they were saying. They could have talked about McDonald's cheeseburgers. I couldn't tell you because I didn't pay any attention. I was like, yeah, don't care. Blah, blah, blah. We got to get some. I don't care. Let's get back to that cool fighting scene because I just love it. And that whole part, Neo and Trinity, I kind of like that, but I didn't need it. I don't think I needed this film. I enjoyed parts of it, but most of it was dull and just uninteresting to me. All I wanted was more fighting. And Jeffrey Goff, do I have the right name? The guy from Hamilton. I kind of thought he was shortchanged. Neil Patrick Harris was good. I kind of liked Neil Patrick Harris as the new architect of the thing. I kind of liked him as the thing. I thought he worked out well. I liked the beginning. I liked the Agent Smith stuff, but I find they just sort of stopped that at one point, and then they picked it back up, and I'm kind of like, this doesn't make sense. How did we got here? Maybe I should have paid more attention to the dialogue, but I didn't find it interesting. It just was not holding my attention anyway. I'm done with this. If they're going to make a new Matrix thing, that's fine, but do something different. Let's focus on different characters in the Matrix, maybe. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of characters we could use. Let's use one of them. And I guess the one thing I should say, I've never seen the Animatrix. Am I in trouble for not seeing that? Would that help me have understood this more?
Not understood, but it's fun. It's good to watch.
Is it? Okay, then maybe one day I'll sit down and watch it. Because I did try once, and I just was not into it the first 5 minutes. I said, this is not for me. But maybe if you guys tell me to watch it, I'll sit down and put it on my list for this year.
I got to agree with both you and Kevin on this, except for the special effects. I like where like he puts his hand through the mirror and it looks like it's like water. And then some of the other special effects I really enjoyed. But other than that, like I wasn't a fan of the Matrix to begin with. I don't think I saw the Matrix Revolutions or the Matrix Reloaded. And I've probably seen parts of the original Matrix. I'm not sure, but like this was new to me, but like I didn't care after the first. I didn't care after some parts, but I did like the special effects in most of it. So that was it.
All right, I guess I'll be the voice of a differing opinion here. I kind of love this movie. Oh when I first watched it, I wasn't loving it, but the more I thought about it, the more it worked for me. The first half with all the meta commentary. They call out Warner Brothers because Warner Brothers wanted to make another Matrix movie. It was originally going to be the origin of Morpheus. But then Lana Wachowski said, all right, I'll make the movie. And I found out the reason she wanted to do it was because I'm not sure if it was just her father or both her parents, but she lost somebody recently, and seeing Trinity and Neo together again was very comforting for her. We're the musical theater people. I thought Jonathan Groff and Neil Patrick Harris were the best performances in this movie. It just worked for me. The more I thought about it, the more I liked it. Neo himself doesn't pick up a gun ever. And I think he uses his powers mostly for protection and deflection of things. I liked it. It worked for me. It was the best sequel of all the Matrix films. Not as good as the original, but definitely better than the other two. I enjoyed it. I had fun.
Glad you did.
I did not see this one. Oh.
That must have been a real nightmare for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Doug. Nightmare Alley, directed by Guillermo del Toro, written by del Toro and Kim Morgan, and based on the book by William Lindsay Gresham, starring Bradley Cooper, Cate Blanchett, Toni Collette, Willem Dafoe, Roger Jenkins, Rooney Mara, Ron Perlman, Mary Steenburgen, David Strathairn, and Holt McCallany. And there's probably more.
Richard Jenkins.
He said Richard Jenkins.
Oh, you did? I didn't hear that. Sorry.
I will start.
Thank you for keeping me honest, though, Doug.
Much improved over the original. Oh, my God. I had so much fun watching this. I wish I saw this first because I was a little upset that I'd just watched the original the week before I watched this one. And I knew all the beats, and it really pissed me off because I was loving the depth this one added to the original film. I mean, I guess they're both based on the same book, but it almost felt like a shot-for-shot remake to me. I didn't feel Del Toro move far from the original film. But he added depth beyond belief in this film. And he explained things I didn't understand in the original. Like, he seemed to just add a couple lines here or a couple lines there, especially the blind jet scenes. When the money, I didn't understand that from the original, and I got the ghost scene, but it was so much better done in this one. And the end of the movie was betterly done. Like, everything that I had problems with in the first film, I thought improved on this film. Just the richness of the characters. Maybe it was better acting or just better written, but I found this film was much easier to follow. Mm-hmm. It made more sense, and it was so beautiful to look at. Like, I could just turn the sound off and put this on the background, just looking at depth. Kate Blanchett is just a wonderful actress. Everything she does, she involves her character. And Bradley Cooper, it blew me away how he's improved as an actor over the years. Just better and better. So I love Nightmare Alley. I think this is a great Del Toro film. I wish people would see it, but it came out at a terrible time. Disney just sort of dumped this against Spider-Man. I don't think that was a good idea. I think this film's going to have legs in the future. I think people are going to discover it and watch it. And I think it's great.
Can I expand on that? Because you're right. This was a great film. I love the his fade-ins and outs. Like, it's sort of like dark. Then light again, and it was like film noir type movie. I don't know if I got the right term. Kevin can correct me if he wants. But like the acting was better. The scene, everything was better. Like I thought from the first film, and I thought that if you want to remake a film, remake that. And it was great. I loved it. Like Cate Blanchett, as you said, Bradley Cooper, and he finally goes down down to bottomless. Like when at the end of the film, he becomes what he didn't want to become, like whatever that character was called. But I really enjoyed it from start to finish. It had my attention.
Had your attention. So I thought, hang on, you're always giving me crap for watching films and not having attention. So don't most films have your attention?
This one more, because the other one I'm going, when is this over?
Yeah, this one I didn't want to end. I was just wanting to stay in this world.
Exactly. Like, I love the where he's running away from after killing Richard Jenkins' character. He's going, I got to get away from here. And it's almost like It's a Wonderful Life, where it transcends into like it getting darker and darker, his life. And I know that's probably a wrong comparison too, but that's how I felt about it.
Well, to go back to you, I think what's really well done is the scene with Blanchett and the money I didn't quite get in the first one, I totally got here.
Yeah.
It explains it more. And I'm like, okay, I get it. That's what I was confused on the first one, was the Blanchett scene. I knew he got ripped off, but I wasn't quite sure I understood what was going on. But this one actually shows the money and stuff, which is kind of what I was looking for the original. So, yeah, I thought that was very well done.
I agree with most of everything you guys are saying. The one difference I would say, I'm not a big fan of Rooney Mara. I didn't think she was an improvement over the original actress.
She was not.
He's become one of those directors that you know it's a Guillermo del Toro movie just by looking at it. And this film is spectacularly gorgeous. Anyone else?
I haven't seen it. I want to see it.
No, I didn't. I didn't see it. I didn't get to the theater.
Interesting.
Well, no, I put it on the list before the Omicron stuff, or however you say it.
Oh, okay.
Drive my car.
I'll drive my car for 3 hours?
Yes, sir.
I'll get
to only about 1 hour that way, 1 hour that way. It's only two. But a 3 hour film, yeah.
Hold on. For me to get to your house is 4 hours.
No, I meant in the movie. Like they drive him like an hour or two.
Only 1 hour to the hotel, 1 hour to the play practice. Yeah. That is correct.
Anyway. Drive My Car is written and directed by Ryosaki Hamaguchi, starring Hidetoshi Nishijima, Toko Miura, Reika Kirishima, and Masaki Okada.
That's pretty good.
That actually was better than usual. That was better than Spielberg the other day.
One thing I had to question before we started was, so this film is actually set in Hiroshima, but in Don't Look Up, that we discussed on the previous episode, DiCaprio says it like Hiroshima, which is correct. I always assumed it was Hiroshima.
I would always say
I thought it was a weird way to say Hiroshima when he said it in the movie.
I've heard both. I don't know which one is correct.
I think we have a tendency to try to sound like we're saying it correctly. That's the new trend right now. So DiCaprio, I'm sure, is probably trying to say it right.
Oh, okay. Hiroshima. Weird. Anyway.
Don't know.
Who wants to start? Do you want me to start since I picked it?
Yes.
Sure. Now, the reason I picked this one was because I saw it on a couple best lists and I had seen
the New York Film Critic list.
Or I think I saw it on just one of the festivals that I look at, and then I also saw it on I remembered about it when I saw it on the best of lists and a lot of lists. And honestly, I put it on because it's a 3 hour Japanese movie. If I didn't put it on the podcast, I would never watch it. Like I'll just be honest about that. If it's not on the podcast, I don't think I would ever watch this film. But I'm glad I did. Like at first I thought the first 40 minutes, and then it doesn't even get, it's 42 minutes in is when the credits actually start and the film actually feels like it begins, because the first 40 minutes all feel like prologue. And at the time I was thinking, okay, you can cut this to maybe about 20 minutes. But when there is that scene in the middle of the film, when I think that was mostly because I wasn't really understanding the dialogue that well. I wasn't really getting the gist of what they were talking about. But when there is that scene in the car with the kind of boyfriend guy, the new actor, and they were talking about how after every time they had sex was, yes, I did read I watched the film with subtitles, Simon. Thank you. Every time after they had sex, she would go through like a screenplay, like her ideas for a screenplay. I didn't really realize that for the first 40 minutes. So I thought that was interesting learning about that. And I was like, okay, I wouldn't touch anything about that first 40 minutes then. And during that scene, like when he's going through the story that she told and you learn that it's such a sacred ritual between them, like for her writing process, I thought that was fascinating. And I thought it was very interesting because at one point in the film, he says, or one sec, I'm just going to look at the character's name. Yusuke says that she doesn't feel like he's driving in a car when the person, that woman is driving him. And when, like, just how dynamic the drama felt in that scene when that guy is going through the story that his wife who died, Oto, is, I just was like, okay, I totally see what he means. It doesn't feel like we're in a car. It just, the drama feels so dynamic that it just feels, yeah, just, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. It just doesn't feel like
good, because I don't know either, and I was going to go there. Perfect.
Yeah, but no, I enjoyed this. I liked the dialogue a lot. It's obviously a long movie. 3 hours, but by the end of it, I thought it was a great, like, just look at grief. And I thought it really picked up once the first 40 minutes went past. And I'll admit I was bored at times, but I thought but when the scenes were good, they were really good. Like the scene with the couple, when the one with the sign language and just learning about them, and just that dinner scene, and just lots of great scenes here, I think.
Yep.
And I'm glad I watched it. And sorry for all the bad way.
Oh, you finished. That's very
nice. Yeah, I did. Yeah, wow. Thank you.
Having a nap there. I thought I was watching the film again.
Okay, that's kind of rude, but all right. book fair. But honestly, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't following what the fuck I was saying anyway.
No.
I drew a roadmap. I kind of took us to work. I took us back home. That's for your listening pleasure, fans.
I don't know if I agree with anything that was said in that last statement because I'm just confused.
What's that bit from Billy Madison? I reward you no points. Whatever you just said has no value and has not changed anyone's opinion in this room.
I'm going to go now. Is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. The first 40 minutes. I enjoyed the combativeness with his wife. I thought that was fascinating. And I was hoping that would continue. And then she drops dead. I'm like, oh, that took a weird turn. Okay, where's this film going? Oh, nope, he's still going on the trip. Oh, okay. And then this is when I find the film kind of opens up a bit more. It opens the world a bit more when we get to meet all the actors. And they all have different inconsistencies. Like, the guy's wife was sign language. I'm kind of like, okay, that's a little strange for this play, but maybe it works. I don't know. I've never seen Uncle Vanya, so I can't really say anything about it. And then one only speaks Korean and one speaks this. I'm like, okay, this is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen, but it seems to work in this world. So I'll let it go. I did like the driver. She was probably my favorite character in the movie was her because I found she had some purpose to do. Other than I found the main character was just driving the plot. That's all he seemed to be there for, was just to give us more to do and introduce more characters that were interesting. I didn't find him interesting, but I found everyone else interesting. My favorite character was the guy's wife that was doing the sign language. He was my favorite guy, but we really don't go. I was glad we went to dinner with him because I felt we got to learn a bit more about him, and I thought he was interesting. And then that led us to have the driver next, who I found fascinating. I think this film was way too long for 3 hours. I think a good 40 minutes could have been cut at times. I'm like, okay, if this came in at 220, I'd probably really, really like it. But the 3 hours, I found it's a little repetitious at times. And the way they take out that lead actor of Uncle Vanya, I thought was dumb. Like how they just kind of got him to play. I'm like, we all knew that was coming anyway. Do you know what I mean? I thought
that was interesting.
But
it's just the anger problems.
I just thought it was silly. I really thought that was silly part. I'm like, we know he's going to take over. Because that's where they introduced it in the first act, that he was Uncle Vanya. So we knew it was coming back here. There was no surprise to me there at all. So overall, I liked it. It was just a little long for me.
See, that's the guy I was talking about in the car, going through the story that the wife told him.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I saw the film.
Yeah, I know you did, Simon.
Okay, good.
Who's next?
I'll go. First, I have to thank Daniel for two things, making me read a movie. But thankfully, okay. You put it on. Huh? No, I had to, it made me pay even more attention than normal. Like, I was paying attention to little details. Whatever, the driver. She was telling a story about, like, this girl who went into her classmate's house and left little reminders that she was there. And then... that she killed someone, and then she wanted to admit it, but then her world changed, but every place else seemed to have gone on like just like normal. But the only thing they added at the house was the camera. I like that. Like I read this as I was watching it. I was like reading it, and I'm going, okay, this is gonna like force me to pay attention to whatever's going on. And as you said, Daniel, the rehearsals for the play. I really enjoyed watching that as the girl with the sign language and everything else. And then like the driver, as you said, I know that's been said before, so I won't go any further, but I thought it was really well done but as you said, Simon, a little more could have been taken off.
I mean, this movie is actually getting a lot of Oscar buzz recently. I can see why. It's definitely... It's like Daniel said, it's a meditation on grief. And I think that's kind of why they started off saying that he would eventually become the lead in Uncle Vanya, And then at the end, it's acceptance. He accepts the role because of, you know, a situation out of his control, but he eventually does accept it, which is the final stage of grief. You basically accept it at the end. It is long. I don't think this is going to be like Parasite and become the foreign film that everybody trumpets and loves. I did enjoy it, though. I did like it. It was long, though. 3 hours is I had to watch it in chunks. I will be honest. I didn't watch it in a 3 hour run. But it was good. I would recommend you watch it. Just maybe not all at once.
Fair. Oh, everything you guys said.
How long did you take us to watch this, Doug?
I think I watched it over 4 nights, so not an hour, an hour, but maybe 45 minutes each night.
I tried to finish it in one night, but at 1 a.m. I said, I got to stop watching this. It's time for me to go to bed. And that was Christmas Day I started this film.
Took me 2.5 nights.
I think I watched it 55 minutes one night, and then I think I watched it almost like over a day the second day.
Well, I finished it on Boxing Day. I was done.
Okay. Nice. Everything you guys said, that's just the put me down for what that's what I thought about the film, because my first bit made no sense.
This was also a TIFF. That's on the TIFF movie.
Oh, that's probably why I heard of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody have any good rowing transitions for the novice? No. Okay, that's the transition then.
There is some bad Michael Shannon film I watched this year about rowing. I can't remember what it was called.
Oh, but yeah. I Heart of Champions.
Terrible.
Heart of Champions. I had that on my list as well. Yeah. Not this list, obviously. But anyway.
Right off.
Novice, written and directed by Lauren Hathaway, starring Isabel Furman, Amy Forsyth, Dylan Jonathan Cherry, and Kate Drummond. And this is filmed in Peterborough. Interesting fact.
Because they have water and a rowing place there?
Trent University.
Oh, it was a film in Troca. That makes sense then.
Yeah. Trent.
They have a rowing team. I'll start. I couldn't get into this either. Remind me of another Daniel film. Every time Daniel does a list, there's Daniel films on it. The Novice.
which Daniel film?
This is The Novice is a Daniel film. Nobody else would pick this film on this list but you. It had that underdog story that Daniel likes. It has the filming Daniel likes. I could not get into this. I tried hard to get into this. I thought it was well shot. I will give this credit. I did like the shooting. I didn't like anything about it. I was just bored. I'm like, I just watched Heart of Champions 2 months ago, and I'm watching another film on rowing, and I still don't like it. I'm like, oh, great. I learned all this stuff in Heart of Champions. I'm watching the same film. I thought this was a better done film than Heart of Champions. I really did like the lead, but she did. I just didn't find this interesting enough for me to hold my attention. I don't know what I was looking for. I just never found it in this film. I don't think it has a heart. Or maybe I don't have a heart watching it. I just felt it went through the motions. Like, it tried hard to make me feel something, which I never felt.
See, I think what you're saying, it has a heart or tries to have a heart, I don't know if it. It's hard because she's the wall between emotions.
I agree.
Yeah, she's. I love the character, but she is unlikable.
See, I couldn't find her likable. That was my problem.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the point. Like her.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, she's just so eye of the prize. I mean, her major is physics when her worst subject is physics. And I think I love this movie as a character study.
I liked the woman helping her more than I liked her. And that bugged me.
She kept pushing her away, though.
The coach.
Okay, the one that gave her the key for the...
Yes.
Okay.
But
yeah, I don't think we're supposed to like her. I think we're supposed to understand her.
I do understand her. I just don't care.
Okay.
Maybe it's just I don't like rowing movies. I don't know.
I feel like it's more like a rowing thriller than like sport. It's just her about... because. I feel like it's just whatever. It could have been anything. It's her obsession with it. Like, I thought one interesting quote was when she said she wasn't the smartest at her high school. She just worked the hardest. So I found her drive fascinating, even though I didn't always understand her. She was always like self-destructive. And I feel like she isn't likable. So that's very like the character is unlikable, but I love the performance. So I think that's very much like when they want you to cry or they want you to like appreciate her, I think you can respect her, but you can't emotionally get there because she has that wall up.
Huh.
That's what I took from it. But I thought the rowing scenes were filmed so well. It's kind of like if you want The Social Network and that's rowing scene from The Social Network over a movie.
Oh, yeah.
He just watched The Novice, basically. It has the similar intensity, almost similar shooting style. I thought so much about this was just great. I love it for a thriller character study. I'll let you jump in, Bob.
Okay, I'm sort of in between you two because, like Simon said, it had no interest. I had no connection to the characters. The only time that it sort of like piqued my interest was she's in the bathroom, and as you said, Daniel, self-destructive behavior. She's cutting herself in the bathroom. I'm going, oh, this is new. But other than that, she's like pushing people away, and she wants to be better than ever. I read it, and it says, I can see that she was trying to push everybody away, but like as Simon said, like, I had no interest. Like there was no connection there for me. It's just what like the rowing scenes and that one scene where she's self-destructive. That's what got me. Like that's the only part where I peeked up and go, oh, I didn't actually do, huh? But
yeah, I don't know. I thought the chemistry between her and Amy Forsyth, and just the fact that Amy Forsyth from her very first lines is like, oh, all these girls have silver spoons up their asses because they're all on scholarships. So I thought that was like very like interesting in their dynamic that she doesn't know that Furman has a scholarship.
Although I'm still glad you put this on the list so I could watch it. Like, okay. It's just an interesting, as you said, character-driven film, I guess?
Yes, I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doug, you watch this one and let me know what you think. I think you would be on my side.
I will watch it eventually. I just didn't get to it for this episode.
That's fair. You were busy finding out what happened to Santa Claus, so I know.
Now, for the last one, did you guys ever work at a video store?
No, but I've been in a video store. Does that count?
Somewhat.
For many, many years, I worked in one, yes.
Which one?
It was called Palmer Video. It was a chain at one point, but I don't know if it made its way up there to Canada, but Palmer Video is where I worked.
Never made it up here. I've seen all the chains that came up here.
I know you were young when you worked there, so do you remember how many locations they had by any chance?
I know that I worked in two of them, so I know it had at least two, but I don't know how many total.
I'm now going to do a search. You guys keep going. I'll see what I can find. Yeah.
Now, I bring that up because the last film was the last Blockbuster, and like since I was a kid, I always wanted to work at Blockbuster, but then they went bankrupt as soon as I would have been able to go work there. So that was a nice surprise.
I am going to interrupt you 1 second. Yes, Doug, no, I found one. Does this help you out? Palmer Video, 709 Boulevard, Kenilworth, New Jersey?
Not where I worked, but it sounds probable.
And I got a Palmer Video store, 1119 Elmore Avenue, Elizabeth, New Jersey.
I have one in Hanover Park, Illinois. Palmer Video.
I worked in Scotch Plains, New Jersey, and I forget the other one, but it was on Route 22. I forget what town it was in.
It looks like it's still around.
Hmm.
Really?
Yeah, so there are a few locations. So there you go, Doug. You can go.
I'll be damned. I can go back to work.
The domain is available for $2,800 on huge domains.
In the Seinfeld episode when he goes back to work at the bagel store because it strikes over 10 years later.
Fair. But yeah, you can buy the domain of bombervideo.com for $2,800 if you're interested.
Well, fund me. Let's get on that. We've got to get Doug's domain. Maybe get another shirt.
Exactly. Now, The Last Blockbuster, directed by Taylor Morden and written by Zeke Cam, narrated by Lauren Lapkus, featuring Doug Benson, Jamie Kennedy, Ron Funches, Brian Posen, more.
And Mr. Boyd is back in the house.
I guess you want me to start? I watched this movie last year when it came out. It's an interesting look at obviously the last Blockbuster store, home video stores pretty much don't exist. There are some holdouts. I think there may be one or two here in Toronto that still exist.
Bay Blur Video is one.
Yeah, Bay Blur. Although they pretty much sell a lot more than they rent. Yeah. Although they do rent a lot. There used to be Suspect, but it's gone. And I think there used to be Queen Street Video and it's gone.
Yeah.
So, it's a dying art form because you can rent stuff just directly from iTunes. So there's no point. But I thought it was interesting. How does this survive, after all of the other ones have long gone? And it's a nice little nostalgia trip from the various actors and filmmakers that contribute to the commentary about the video store generation, like Kevin Smith, who basically he worked at a video store himself. Yeah. And I thought it was an interesting look at an era that doesn't seem to want to pass in that one area. You know, it wants to keep that nostalgia going. And they've managed, I was just reading an article about how they managed to survive through the pandemic by having special events and sleepovers and selling t-shirts and things like that. So it's become a draw. So as you drive through that town, you stop in, you get like a t-shirt or take your picture out in front of the last Blockbuster, that type of thing. So, ultimately the documentary is kind of forgettable. It's just like a testament to an era that we grew up in. So I remember it well. So, I mean, this doesn't necessarily make me nostalgic for it.
First off, yeah. I would buy a t-shirt and get a membership card. Mm-hmm. 100%. But I just want to get into this. I enjoyed it. I had a good time watching this. I never want to hear Doug Benson talk again for long as I live. Like, he was painful. Absolutely painful going, like, shut up, Doug. I don't care.
So don't listen to his podcasts.
Not you, Doug. Don't worry.
I don't think I will. I think Kevin Smith thought it was his documentary at one point because he just kept yipping. Okay, enough, Kevin. I like the background stuff. I like when the woman would tell us how she got her videos and she'd go to Target or go to Walmart or whatever and pick them up. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize they had to buy the name from whoever owned it and get the rental agreement for that. I had no idea. That was kind of neat. And I also like how I thought it was a very much a family atmosphere, that everybody had worked there and she seemed like a really nice lady that ran the place. And so that, but yeah, I think this documentary is pretty much forgettable, but did it need to be made? Probably. I mean, it is nice to have a piece of history so I can show my kids going, hey, I used to go to one of these when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I remember going when VHS first came out and going to VHS walls.
Yeah, I do too.
And taking stuff off the VHS. So I thought it was kind of fun, but Lauren Lapkus annoys me. Doug Benson annoys me. I don't know. I mean, I wish I had a few more interviews with people, but I mean, I don't know what I'm looking for. Maybe I'm looking for depth that can't exist because, I mean, it is just a Blockbuster store. I don't know.
Yeah, I used to go like every Friday. I would get one new release and then one old release.
I
would get two for the weekend. That was my ritual.
There is a video store near Daniel. Remember Stacy Q's Donuts? About four blocks.
Susie Q.
Susie Q's. four blocks to the west, there is a video rental store. Really? I went there last time I was in Ottawa.
Okay, I might have to. Movies and stuff?
Yes, they had stuff for sale. That's why I went. And that is a full-on rental store.
Might have to go. I have, might have to make a trip.
It's there. And they have a brewery. So they have a brew.
Oh, nice.
Nearby.
That's cool. That's cool.
If he ever makes it to Ottawa.
Yeah. I like that. But yeah, no, I like the movie. I don't know if it's, I had like nostalgia more than the film, because like you say, it's kind of forgettable. I feel this isn't like an 88-minute documentary, but I felt like they were going over the same beats. I feel like it could have easily been 60 minutes, kind of highlight the history. I thought it was interesting learning about the history of Blockbuster, like how that they were really just bankrupt instead of Netflix taking them down, and that they were going to try to be this big titan, but it didn't work out, obviously. I thought it was interesting learning, like you said, Simon, about how they'd have to, like, they had to buy the name for it to be a franchisee. They had to pay, what, $99 to rent the VHS? And that's why what really started it, because they were too expensive at the start of home media. So I thought that history was really interesting. But what I thought would be most interesting to me was, like, learning from the actors and such who used to work at these Blockbusters. And I thought that was great. Like, every time Ron Funches was on screen, that was my favorite part of the film. But yeah, Doug Benson was painful. When he took us to the Blockbuster, I was kind of like, it just feels forced. I was kind of cringing through that. And then that one time when the local film critic went to Blockbuster and they were doing the voiceover and then they would lip sync to what they were saying, I thought that was pretty cringy. And also I thought Lauren Lapkus's voiceover narration, I thought the audio was just really bad. Like the rest of the film was much louder than her actual audio. And that in a film like this, that shouldn't happen. But in general, I did enjoy it. But I think I like nostalgia more than the film itself.
So while you guys were talking, I went to the website and you can buy a t-shirt for $20 and get a membership card for $2.
Oh, wow.
And they have beanies. And I'm thinking to myself, my birthday's coming up in April. I think I'm going to order myself a shirt. But it's going to have to go to New Jersey first, I think, and then come back. Okay.
Just to mention, the last Blockbuster is in Bend, Oregon.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Bend, Oregon, Bend Blockbuster is the website.
Okay. So
if anybody wants to look at it and check it out, there you go. But it's just nostalgic for me, but I don't really need it. I'd rather go around Kevin's house and check out old trades and
I want to go, but it's 41-hour drive from Ottawa.
Oh, my God.
So if I ever go to Oregon, hopefully soon.
Well, that's the same drive for me, and Doug's probably got the same problem.
Is it near Portland?
Yes.
A couple hours away, I think.
Oh, okay. So, no, I won't make a special visit when I go to Portland later this month.
Okay, hold on. If you guys keep talking, I'll look.
I'm on it right now. It's 3 hours, 9 minutes.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't close.
Yeah, I'll agree with what you guys said. It was more a nostalgia bomb for me, especially because I worked at a video store. But I will say Palmer Video did have adult videos and Blockbuster didn't. So in my first day I ever worked at a Palmer Video, I had to alphabetize the adult videos. So
how old were you?
I actually was 16 at the time. I had to get special permission from my parents. And they're like, yeah, go ahead. So
how did that conversation go? Like, hey, mom, do you mind if I organize porn at my new job?
It just reminds me of the scene from Clerks when Jeff, he's reading off the list of porn titles while the woman and her child are there asking if they have the Thomas the Train movie or whatever the case is. And
It was almost like that. My first day, they were actually refurbishing the store, so there was no customers. So my father dropped me off. The manager comes out and goes, hey, Doug, this is many years ago. I apologize for the language. He goes, hey, Doug, I got some gay shit for you to do. You have to alphabetize all the homosexual porn. And then he goes to my dad, who dropped me off, is that okay with you? My dad goes, yeah, as long as you're paying them. So I do remember distinctly. Film called Dick of Doom. So
Oh, wow. Maybe we should do a review on that in the next episode's Dick of Doom. Well, I think that's it. We're done.
Oh, intern? No, no. I just looked it up. It's 37 hours for me to get from here to Bent, Oregon.
I'll pay for road trip.
Yeah, I'm not going.
I thought you were going to say Dick of Doom is 37 hours.
No.
That's way too long.
That's a series. That's a box set. That's a long dick.
Yes. I did enjoy the movie for the nostalgia bit. And then I learned more about the history. And like you said, there was one part where they could have kept going had they gone into a streaming partnership with somebody. I forget who it was. Maybe it was Netflix.
They could have bought Netflix.
Yeah. And they said, no thanks, and laughed in their face. And then they went, boink. But I'm glad one left over. But would I watch it again? Nope. But did I like it? Yes.
But would you go to a Blockbuster again? I would like to.
Not for 37 hours. No, I'd probably go to yours and take me less time to get there. 4 hours.
But will it smell the same?
Oh, it smells the same. That one smells the same.
Okay.
Well, I used to go to four video stores. Blockbuster was one. Jumbo Video was one.
Oh, I remember Jumbo Video.
There was two others in Oshawa I went to, and I can't remember the names, but like
Video 99 would have been one.
Video 99 was one,
and I don't know what the fourth one was. When I first started dating my wife, I was so excited that she had a video store still near her because we had something called Dino Video, but they went out of business. So I really didn't have one, so I got all excited to actually go in and pick up DVD. She's like, is there anything you haven't seen? That's when I started going, seen it. So I guess that's it.
Can
Mike
I just
Kevin, are we done?
One more.
I think
can I put
that's
one
it.
More thing in.
No.
Yeah.
Did I was just gonna ask? Did you guys like actually like buy anything at the end of the sale? Because like I thought Ron French is saying like I'm gonna rent these video games and never bring them back because you're closing anyway. I thought that was the funniest thing.
I did buy stuff. I watched it and got rid of it, but I do still have. And I picked it up recently. It was in somebody was donating DVDs. One of the cases that say Blockbuster on it. If you guys have to, I can go get it if somebody really wanted to see it. But I actually do still have a case that has Blockbuster on it.
I remember
I've been currently looking for a Blockbuster sign, one of those neon signs, for like 10 years. Never seen one.
I remember I bought
one that was on Eglinton and Kennedy. Like the sign was there for the longest time after the store was closed. I took a picture of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have to find it.
Remember, I bought Zach and Miri Make a Porno, and it had one of those scratch and sniff things, and it still smells to this day, 10 years later.
It smells like weed. Okay, if they make it.
You make us watch it.
We'll watch
it. Okay, bye.